Thank you very much, Mr. Wells. Hey, everyone. It's Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, coming up in just a moment. We've got a lot of great things to talk about, including education. I have so many questions for an education folks, a professor we're going to have on, about who determines what gets taught in schools. Boy, if that isn't a hot topic right now. And as someone that doesn't have kids, I'm a little naive on the subject. And maybe you are too. A lot of legislature stepping in saying what schools can or can't teach. Parents upset about a lot of things that are or aren't taught in schools. Well, who has the ultimate say? We're going to get an answer on that a little bit later on. We'll also be chatting about insurance issues and claims with attorney Neil Gainsburg. Really fascinating discussion about, I don't know what to call them. I think they're called non-traditional low-cost insurance companies, and how even if you have great insurance, how if other people don't, it really, really impacts you. You won't want to miss that. We got a lot more coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. I'll tease that in a little bit. We also have our question of the day, and we can give that away right now. 312-981-7200. If you've got an answer to this question, we'll give you a good prize. We'll tell you what it is after the break. Here's the question. In 2003, in the United States, there were 7,465 of these. In 2020, there were 1,788, nearly 75% less. In 2003, about 7,500 of these. In 2020, there were about 1,800. Do you know the answer? Do you want to take a guess? 312-981-7200. Hopefully you'll get an answer to the question of the day, give away that prize, and plenty more coming up here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Well, a very sunny, at least it's downtown, it's sunny. Saturday afternoon, everyone. This is Let's Get Legal. It's powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, and I'm John Hansen. 3:10 on this Saturday afternoon. Got a great show for you. We're going to be talking about insurance, how to cover yourself when other people aren't so covered, and some, I don't want to call them scams, but they're companies that offer insurance that certainly isn't maybe up to the insurance that you have and how that can impact you. In the 4 o'clock hour, we're also going to talk about cryptocurrency and divorce. And I don't mean those two things separately. I mean that as more and more people are using cryptocurrency, it's really impacting what's happening in divorces, which I had never thought of, but I guess it makes total sense, right? Splitting assets. How do you track assets? Cryptocurrency is supposed to be this secretive thing, this very private, off the books. I don't want to say off the books, but you know what I mean? Off to the side thing. Well, it's coming up in divorces a lot now, too. We'll get to that in the 4 o'clock hour and a lot of your other questions and fun as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone line. And our question of the day today, we have one every week. And if you're new to the program, by the way, this is our normal time. We kind of jump around a lot because of Northwestern basketball, football, and of course the Blackhawks too. But we're on our normal time today, 3 to 5. We take all the big stories of the week and kind of look at them through a legal lens and get experts on to help you and answer your questions too. But we also have a lot of fun, including the question of the day each week. This one is, in 2003, there were 7,465 of these in the United States. In 2020, last year, or no, 2 years ago, there were 1,788. Well, let's go to the phone lines. Nancy, you're on WGN. Happy Saturday, Nancy.
Happy Saturday to you, too.
How was your day? Where are you calling us from?
Elwood, Illinois.
Elwood, Illinois. All right, what's your guess?
Billionaires with a B.
Billionaires with a B. Great guess. I think that the number's probably actually gone up since 2003, where this is the reverse trend. It's not the answer we're looking for, Nancy, but I did look up how many billionaires there are in the United States. 614 in 2020. So there
wow,
you go.
That's still a lot.
That's it's more than I got. I'll tell you, I'm not one of them, Nancy. Are you?
No, absolutely not.
Thanks for calling, though. We appreciate it, okay?
Thank you. Bye. Let's
go to Sandy. Sandy, good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Hi, just fine.
Where are you calling from?
I'm in Lake Zurich, actually.
Oh, nice. And what is your guess to the question today?
My guess is a landline phone, an old-fashioned house phone.
That is a great guess. I bet the percentages are right on, right? Probably about 75% less landlines. Those numbers seem a little low for total landlines in the United States, and in fact, they are. But it was a great guess, Sandy. I like where your head's at, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Let's go to Jefferson. Hey, Jefferson, how you doing today?
John, how are you?
Doing great. Where are you calling from, my friend?
Saugeenash, Northwest Side.
Saugeenash. Love the Northwest Side. What's your guess for the question of the day today?
I'm going with public payphone.
That's a great guess, too. And maybe those numbers do line up. I would think maybe in 2003 there were more, although they were probably already dwindling. But you're probably right on again with those percentages, right? Like 75% less of them. But that's not the answer of the day, my friend. I'm sorry.
Hey, you know what? You got to stay on. This has got to be your time. Because on the weekends when it's cold out, you're at home, you're going through mail, you're getting ready for next week, you're ironing shirts. Our politics don't always jibe.
Okay.
But I love the show.
Hey, Jefferson.
I could care less about Northwestern basketball.
Okay.
Care less.
Well, a lot of us do care, but Jefferson, thank you for the compliment, and we appreciate the call. Good luck ironing the shirts the rest of the day, okay?
You bet.
Let's go to Dwayne. Dwayne, you're on WGN. How's it going, Dwayne?
Great, great. Thanks.
7,465 of these in 2003. In 2020, there's 1,788. What's your guess?
Buffalo.
I think there's more buffalo than that. And hasn't there been a resurgence in buffalo, I thought? I don't know. You know, I just tried buffalo burgers for the first time in a while, Dwayne. You ever had those?
Yes, I have, and they're very good.
They're very good. Yeah. That's not the answer to our question, but thanks for calling, my friend, okay?
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck. All right, let's go to Peter. Peter, you're on WGN. How you doing, Peter?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Tom?
Good. Where are you calling from today?
From Woodstock.
Woodstock. How's everything up there in the far northwest suburbs of Woodstock?
We're doing great up here. Thank you.
Great. What's your guess?
My guess is wolves.
Yeah, I think there are way less wolves than there used to be, right? I don't know the exact number. I don't have it in front of me, but it's not the answer to the question of the day, Peter. I'm sorry.
Right on. All good.
Yeah, I love it. You know what? Take a stab in the dark, right? I appreciate that you did that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Good
there you go.
You,
for sure. 312-981-7200. Let me let you all know what you're going to win if you get this right. You're going to get a $50 gift card to the 50-50 Restaurant Group to be used at any one of their 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza and the 50-50 Sports Bar, to the person that gets the answer right to today's question of the day. After the break, we're going to talk about education in the United States and who gets to decide what is taught in the classrooms. We'll also take a couple more calls for the question of the day, so 312-981-7200. Get on the line for that. We'll talk after this on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I could sit down and listen to Dave Ennett and Northwestern basketball, football, whatever it is, all day long. But this is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We're going to get to Professor Dixon in just a moment. We have a couple more guesses for our question of the day. If you're just joining us, here it is. In 2003, in the United States, there were 7,465 of these. In 2020, there were 1,788, less than a quarter of them. Let's go to Carl. Carl, you're on WGN. How are you doing today, Carl?
I'm doing well.
What's your guess, my friend?
I say it's mailboxes.
Great guess. I bet there's still more than 1,700 mailboxes, though, in the United States.
Probably.
Yeah, but I like the guess. I like where your head's at. You're thinking smart.
Awesome.
Thanks, Carl. Appreciate it. Let's go to Gary. Gary, you're on WGN.
Hi, this is Gary calling from Frankfurt, and my guess was Sears stores.
Ah, yes, of course. We've seen the decline of Sears. I don't know if there's 1,788 of them anymore. I'd have to look that up. Great guess. Not the answer, though, Gary. I appreciate it, okay?
Great. Thank you.
Let's go to Debbie. Debbie, you're on WGN. How are you doing, Debbie?
I'm great. How are you?
You know, I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. What's your guess?
My guess is movie theaters.
I don't know if that's the exact answer. Again, there could always be more than one. That's why I was very specific with the number, because I doubt it's the exact same. That might sound about right, Debbie, but that's not the answer we're looking for, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, let's go to, we just lost Chris, 312-981-7200. Tell you what, we will be back in a little bit to talk about the question of the day. So you can get on hold if you want right now, but we'll answer some of those in a little bit later on in the show. That's called a tease in the business. But I want to pivot to our first guest of the show here on Let's Get Legal, and that's Professor Adrian Dixon of the University of Illinois. Professor, thanks for hopping on with us here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I just am really thrilled to be able to chat with you, because one of the hottest topics in the United States these days are what is happening in our classrooms, as more and more legislatures hope to, or I don't know what they hope to do, but they're starting to really analyze what is taught in schools, what should or shouldn't be taught in schools, and that really has divided our country, which I guess should be no surprise, because we're divided about just about everything. But Professor, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on is you quite literally helped write and edit the book about critical race theory in education back in 2006. What is your, I guess what's your overall, are you surprised that this has become such a hot national topic here in the years 2020 to 2022?
I am surprised that it has become the boogeyman issue, mm-hmm. and that nearly every state is fashioning some sort of legislation against critical race theory, because it's really not the, it's not what it's represented to be, and mischaracterized as, even by legislatures, and in particular in some popular media sites. So it's unfortunate, and I am surprised at how it's kind of, you know, been the catch-all for every bad thing that people ascribe to public education.
Right. It has kind of become that catch-all. And look, there's interesting policy debates, I think, that everyone can have. Like, I think talking about what our kids are learning is an important conversation. Mm-hmm. And the more people we kind of welcome to the table to offer their input, I mean, that can be hard, right? But I think that's important, yep. To sure. have a conversation. As long as I think people dive deep enough to learn more about what's really going on. There's a lot of debate about whether critical race theory, and I'm not going to make this whole segment about this. I want to zoom out a little bit, but whether it is taught in K-12 or not. What's your thoughts on that? Because I know that a lot of people say, well, it's not taught in school right now, but issues of systematic racism are taught in some high school levels. What's your general take on where it is taught in the United States?
Yep. So critical race theory in general is not a subject matter that's taught in public schools in the U.S. for the most part. I can't name, and I was a social studies teacher. I prepared social studies teachers. I helped write some social studies standards when I was in Ohio, training for teachers on social studies standards in Ohio. I didn't write the social studies standards. And I know that there aren't, critical race theory is not a part of any formal curriculum in schools. Could someone who's been to college, who may have read a book, that was either directly about critical race theory or referenced critical race theory. Could a teacher have read a book and then they go and create a course and that might be lingering in their consciousness? Sure.
Right.
Just like if they had taken a class in women's studies or if they had taken a course in European history. All of that could be in their consciousness. But for the most part, there isn't a standalone or even a textbook that's written for K-12 schools that is a critical race theory curriculum guide that just doesn't, that's been sold to be taught in K-12 schools. There have been examples of school districts, one district in particular that I know about, Tucson. Public schools, that led to some legislation that banned all ethnic studies in public education K-20. So there was a Tucson Public Schools offered a ethnic studies course and that focused on actually Latinx history. Mm-hmm. The person who created it was a PhD student who had taken courses in critical race theory. He was informed by that and used it to create the course, but he wasn't necessarily teaching kids critical race theory. But it led to a statewide ban that, from a high school course, banned all ethnic studies, even in higher education. And then eventually it took close to a decade, not fully a decade, but close to a decade, to reverse that course.
Wow.
Because it was quite, you know, expansive and just unnecessary.
Right.
But
I appreciate your perspective on that. I'm curious, what role then do parents have in the education of their students? Like, what is the balance between government and parents determining what should be taught in schools? That's a difficult question that has probably lingered since the start of public education.
Yeah, it has, because, you know, just like our government, we have representative governance, right? So school boards represent the interests of their constituents. So theoretically, parents do have a say. They have a say when they vote on their school board members. They have a say when they vote on, you know, their state legislatures who install the governor. In most places, the governor selects the superintendent of education. And so in the way that our broader sense of governance and democracy works in the U.S., parents do have a say. Do they have a direct say in the day-to-day curriculum one-to-one? No, because that's not how we have set up our governance system. But can they participate at the local level? Absolutely. They can go to their school board. They can go to their school. But do they have a say in what books get adopted? No, because it just doesn't make sense necessarily, given the diversity, right, of the economic,
right,
the ethnic diversity, that schools would be able to represent the interests and beliefs of every single family member in the district. And so they have to do the best that they can to represent the whole, right, to
mm-hmm.
try to address the issues of the whole, which is, kind of the purpose of how our democracy works.
What about the role of state legislatures, right? Elected officials who have to, mm-hmm. In many ways, they're politicians. They think that they go where the wind blows sometimes, as much as we hate that. Do legislatures play too large of a role sometimes in our school systems, in your opinion?
I absolutely think they do, and I say this both as a former educator, and as a social studies teacher, and as one who has trained teachers. So I was a professor at Ohio State. I started there in 2004. I'm just saying this as an example. When I started in 2004, the state had started to experience, as had the rest of the state, an incredible economic downturn. People were losing homes, defaulting on credit cards, et cetera, et cetera. And the state was also outsourcing most of its industry. So Ohio had, you think of Ohio as kind of a blue collar state. A lot of factories, textiles in particular, but textiles and automobiles were outsourcing, were moving their operations internationally.
Mm-hmm.
So factories were closing down in the state. Well, if factories are closing down, people are not working.
Right.
They're not able to pay their bills, right? Well, the wisdom of the legislature was, we will require that schools teach personal finance. That was in direct response to the high foreclosure rates, the high defaults on credit cards and other loans, is that people just need to learn how to manage their money. And so it became required in the high school curriculum that they add a personal finance course. Because, again, and this was mandated by the state legislature. It had really nothing to do with what was actually happening in the state of Ohio. But as things play out politically and economically, schools get burdened with taking up that whatever the legislatures perceive to be the issues. And all that gets played out in schools, and in particular public schools. Private schools are, are
a whole other matter, yeah.
But public schools get burdened with these things. And so, yes, to your question, I think legislatures are too involved in the governance of public schools and then what we should learn and not learn in schools.
Great. I appreciate that. Professor, we only have like 30 seconds to a minute left. This goes so fast, as always. We're just beginning to scratch the surface, and I hope we can further our conversation. Just one last question for you is, do we have an opportunity, though, now that people really are engaged? I know we're really split on things. Could there be actual learning moments, and really we could actually make education better if parents stay engaged and we do school board meetings the right way?
I absolutely believe that, and I spoke to the Association of the Illinois State of School Boards actually and suggested that we think about kind of broadening the dialogue and making it more transparent. What makes parents and just people in general feel uncomfortable is when it seems opaque, right? When it feels like they don't get to share their perspective, and it appears that what they say and believe doesn't matter, and we do need to give more access for people to participate in the conversation.
Amen. Right? Like I want to welcome that people are engaged, even if we all don't agree on everything. That's the whole point. Let's just have civil discussions in the proper forum and like have some transparency about it. I think that's something we all can agree on. And I hope that is something we can do moving forward. Professor Dixon, like I said, we're just scratching the surface. Please come back again. I really appreciate your perspective.
I would love Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much. And boy, that's an important conversation. After the news, 312-981-7200, on your thoughts, should state legislatures be deciding what we have? Should parents have 100% control over what happens in our education? Is it a mix of both? We'll get to some of those calls and also maybe an answer to the question of the day after the news here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Hey there, I'm John Hansen. I'll be taking you till 5 o'clock today. This is our normal time. And yeah, we appreciate you joining us. We are going to be covering all things insurance claims and so-called low-cost insurance companies. And frankly, some rather shocking news stories I've been reading about what happens if the person that causes an accident to your property, to your car, is severely underinsured, let's say. They're insured, but it's basically like they aren't, and how you're going to be left footing the bill, and what we need to know about that. Neil Gainsburg going to be joining us, a personal injury attorney, in just a little bit. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Our question of the day today is, in 2003, there were 7,465 of these. In 2020, there were 1,788. If you got any guesses, 312-981-7200. We had some really great ones coming in. 815 on the text line guessed video stores. Another guest, 630, chimed in with new cars. Had a couple people guessing mailboxes and payphones. That's not the answer. The 312, their guess for what has decreased by 75% over the last few years was rational thinkers. Perhaps correct. I don't know for sure if that's the answer, but that was a good guess to be sure. Let's go to the phone lines. And Chris, you're on WGN. How you doing here, Chris?
Good. Wanted to take a shot at your excellent question there.
Yeah, what's your where are you calling from, by the way, Chris?
Calling from Lockport.
Lockport, all right. What's your guess?
I am going to say bank robberies, just because of COVID. I think that banks were only open through the drive-through. So it's probably hard to do a robbery through the drive-through.
So you were guessing that 2020 was a weird year, and that would affect how many would happen, a bank robbery?
That's something that came to mind. It could be some other robbery, but I'm going to say banks.
Yeah. Well, you're right, Chris. Congratulations.
Okay, great.
Hey, that's awesome. Yeah, really great logic through it. Bank robberies have actually gone down. They were going down between like 5,000, 4,000, 3,000 over the last 20 years. We were averaging about 3,000 to 4,000 a year until 2020, when there was a huge drop. And while I got you, Chris, what day of the week do you think is the most popular for a bank robbery?
What day of the week, huh?
Yeah. And it's been the same every single year that data has been taken.
I would hope it wouldn't be a Friday, because that'd be stupid. There's too many people around. I'd say a Monday.
Well, it's a Friday.
you think it, you know, if you're smart, and I'll go in there when it's busy.
Well, right, but you aren't robbing banks, Chris. So, yeah, it's Friday, and again, every single year that stats have been taken, Friday comes out as number one.
On a Friday, that's probably why.
What do you think the most common time of day is? Is it early morning, midday, afternoon, evening?
Probably like around 11 o'clock.
9 to 11. Are you an FBI agent that knows this? Because I got all my data from the FBI website. Every year except for one, the most common time for a robbery of a bank is between 9 and 11 in the morning. How about that, Chris?
I think I just watched too many crime movies.
It's finally paying off for you, Chris.
Finally.
You're getting our prize today. It's a $50 gift card to 5050 Restaurant Group to be used at any one of their 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza and the 5050 Sports Bar. And, Chris, I'm sure you're going to enjoy that, my friend.
Yeah, I think they have a place on Second City, right, on top of the rooftop there.
I should know that. I don't. I'll look it up. And if so, then that's great. You can double dip.
Okay.
Stay on the line, Chris, okay?
Sure.
I couldn't believe that. Bank robberies Friday. Chris brings up such a good point. You wouldn't think that'd be the day to do it. But apparently between Fridays and 9 and 11, at least for the past 20 years, that has been the most common time to rob a bank. By the way, I tried to get a clue question of the day that was both legal in nature and financial in nature. To let you all know, if you didn't hear the news, that we're going to have a new show starting on February 7th, Monday through Thursdays. It's called Your Money Matters, and I'm going to host it. I'm looking really forward to it. Let's Get Legal is staying where it is. Don't worry, I'll still be on Saturday afternoons, but I'll be hosting every single day, Monday through Thursday at least, on here on WGN 6 to 7, and we're going to do similar things that we do with Let's Get Legal, right? There's a lot of news in the world. How does it impact what happens to your bank accounts, to your 401ks, is. Where should you be investing money right now? Everyone's been saying the stock market for so long, and then we just had four terrible days on the market, and everyone's starting to wonder if they should get more cash in hand. Inflation's on the rise, but unemployment's super low. Like, it's a very Jekyll and Hyde economy, and I, for one, am someone that wants to learn more about it. So just like on this show, I am not the expert, but we will have some great experts on the program. We're going to take your questions a lot and really answer the ultimate question of how can you get more money in your wallet? How can you spend a little bit less on things? Or where should you be spending money the right way? I really look forward to hosting it. It's going to be great. Again, it's Your Money Matters, and it starts on Monday, February 7th. Probably should get that date right, considering I'm the host. And it's from 6 until 7 o'clock. So we'll be right after Chicago's Afternoon News, lead right into John Landecker or Blackhawks hockey. And I really appreciate the opportunity by WGN. I'm really thrilled and excited and honored to be hosting that show. Okay, tell you what, we're going to take a break here on Let's Get Legal, and then we're going to talk to Neil Gainsburg after this on 720 WGN. You're listening to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Hope it's sunny by you, whether in reality or at least inside your own mind. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, and we're bringing on personal injury attorney Neil Gainsburg from Gainsburg Law. Neil, how are you doing here today? Get right up to the microphone, my friend.
I'm doing great.
Thanks for having me. You were trying to lean back and have that mic pick up the volume. No, you got to get close to it.
I'm just trying to be comfortable. It is a beautiful view up here on the 18th floor.
It is great. Hey, let's talk about insurance. That's what you deal with a lot. And these so-called, what do you call them? Low-cost insurance companies? Is there a designation about what we're going to talk about here?
Low-cost or non-standard insurance companies, not the insurance companies you would see on TV.
Okay. Why do these companies exist? Walk us through the inception for a low-cost insurance company.
So Illinois has mandatory insurance for automobile drivers or automobile owners. If you own a car in Illinois, you must have insurance on that vehicle. And the requirements are a liability coverage so that if you cause an accident, you'll be able to provide that other person that you injured or damaged their car a remedy so that they can get their car repaired or get damages for what happened. So basically, in order for these insurance companies or for people to have insurance, to be around with insurance, what happens is basically that, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. It sounds like a good thing to me, right?
I just got a little crossed up there.
It's confusion, but here, that seems like it makes sense to me, right? Like, we want people to be insured.
Right, so these lower-cost insurance companies come from the idea that there are a lot of people out there that are underprivileged, they're low-income, they don't have a lot of money to pay for insurance. So the lower-cost insurance companies takes up that market share for people who need insurance and don't have a large amount of money. Insurance is like any other commodity. You could pay a lot of money for insurance, like you can pay a lot of money to buy a house, or you could pay less money to buy a smaller house. Mm-hmm. These people are just buying the smaller houses, they're buying the less expensive food, less expensive clothes, they're buying something that fits their budget. So these insurance companies come into to help people who have that need and have to pay for that lower cost.
Right. They got to drive to go to work.
Right.
We need people working, you know, all sorts of jobs in this economy. So where does the problem come in? Obviously, the price comes with less insurance coverage, of course. But then is it because these companies also do not operate very smoothly that really causes the problems?
Exactly. So with the lower cost insurance companies, you're not getting the same sort of customer services that you would get with one of the higher standard type of insurance companies. Lower cost, like anything else, means a lower type product. The product that you're purchasing, because again, insurance is like any other commodity, it's a product you're purchasing to provide for you if you're in an accident or some sort of casualty happens. The product that you're getting is less standard. So you're going to have worse customer services, worse, especially what we deal with in the personal injury industry, is worse claims process. Mm-hmm. Where if somebody who has a low-cost insurance causes an accident, it's very difficult claims because there's not a lot of laws or regulations out there to tell insurance companies, for these lower-cost companies, of how to deal with claims. So you're going to be dealing with frustration, with a lot of inconvenience if you get into an accident with somebody who has low-cost insurance.
Okay, so I'm used to bad customer service through big box things. I think we're all used to it, right? You call someone, you get redirected 9 times. If you ever get to a human at all, it's robots. Is that what we're talking about here, or is it even worse?
I would say it's even worse. And it's not just for people getting accidents with customers of low-cost insurance companies. If a customer of a low-cost insurance company, you know, loses control of their car and hits a pole, but they have full coverage, collision coverage on their car, and they need to get their car fixed, they then have to go through the claims process. So any type of claim with the low-cost insurance company is going to be a huge headache. It's going to be a lot of phone calls, a lot of waiting on hold, a lot of paperwork. Sometimes they're mailing paperwork and you don't get it. And with COVID stuff, their offices are closed. They have less staff. And so you don't do emails and stuff like that. You have to mail stuff and you have to wait for paperwork. And it's just a big nightmare for a lot of people if you get involved in the claims with these low-cost insurance companies. And you're calling and calling and calling and you're realizing you're not getting anywhere. And meanwhile, your car's disabled mm-hmm. or not working, and you need to get to work, you need to get your job, what do you do at that point? So it's a lot of issues that can arise from a very poor claim system that these low-cost companies often have.
Is it deliberate on their part, or is it legitimately they just don't have the operating expenses to do that? Or are they trying to delay, and hope that you give up?
That is a great question. I think that their business model is based on what their budgets can support. So they provide low-cost insurance, so they're going to provide claims processes, claims adjusters, claims handling in the way that they see fit and consistent with what the Illinois law and regulations do. And there's no Illinois law that says they have to call you right back, or that you can only be on hold for 20 minutes, or that you're going to get a right answer right away. Somebody's going to contact you right away, or somebody's going to come out and look at your car.
So there's no laws about that?
There's very little law.
Okay.
The regulations are very broad and generalized as to what low-cost insurance companies have to do in terms of dealing with a claim. And they'll comply with those laws and the generalizations of the laws, but it just does not put any sort of pressure on them to do stuff quickly or fast. No urgency whatsoever.
So what we're saying is they may be operating within their legal boundaries, but that the laws themselves have not caught up with the realization of what's actually happening here.
Exactly. With technology, with text messages now, and cell phones and all that other stuff. Now, some of these low standard insurance companies are being able to do stuff with phones, but it's the delay. It's the time it takes for them to get back. People think if you're in an accident, your insurance company is going to be right there. They're going to help you. If the other driver caused it, the other driver's insurance company is going to be right there. They're going to help you with, you know, getting your car moved, getting a rental car if you need one while your car is in the shop, doing all those things that you need to get back to what you were doing before an accident to make you whole. But it's these insurance companies don't do that. What they do is their claims process is on their time. It's on what they have to do. And a lot of times they have to investigate what low-cost insurance companies do is they aggressively look at coverage. So they often look at whether their driver is actually who caused the accidents before they make any payments is actually covered under their policy. They have the right and the ability to look to see if there is coverage for them. And they more aggressively look to see at the whole picture to make sure before they write any check, before they pay one dime, whether there is coverage for their driver.
So if there's any mistake along the way or error or omission on a form, that could delay that process indefinitely.
Exactly. And they also need to get statements from their drivers. So if you get rear-ended and your car is damaged and you want to make a claim, you call right away because you want your car fixed.
Yeah, and you have good insurance.
Right. Well, I mean, you have good insurance, so sometimes because of that, you have to go through your own insurance.
Right.
But if you don't have good insurance, if you have a similar non-standard,
I see.
Or you have an older car, so you only have liability, you don't have collision coverage to cover your car, so you have to rely on the liability insurance company of the driver that hit you, and it's a non-standard company, you call them right away, you want your car fixed, but we got to get a statement from our driver.
Mm-hmm.
And that driver who caused an accident may not want to talk to his insurance company, maybe, you know, embarrassed, concerned. So they could wait weeks, even months, to talk to their driver, and that could cause huge delays. They could also look at the whole form process of how their driver got insurance, whether their driver disclosed all that needed to be disclosed,
uh-huh.
whether the driver was driving for a rideshare company, because rideshare could affect premiums and could affect coverages. And they do this whole investigation. And lastly, they often want their drivers to fill out like forms that they mail to them. And they won't act before they mail the forms. They expect their drivers to fill them out, mail them back.
It's very archaic.
It's very archaic. They have not they've not caught up with the times, but I think they're more doing more emails these days, but still they got to wait for their driver to download the emails or do what needs to be with the documents to get them completed.
Okay. 312-981-7200 if you got any questions on this. We got a lot of texts from people being like, is this my insurance company? I'm not going to go through the names of them all. But all of these names that I'm getting on the text line are recognizable names I see on television. That's not who we're talking about, right?
Right. So again,
these are big national companies. Right, they're good.
If you see a company advertising on television, usually it's a quality company.
Like a little, if a little lizard represents them, they're in good shape.
That doesn't mean that they still fight claims and they'll do what they think is right and they'll look at coverage stuff. But when it comes to basic customer service about talking to somebody, getting somebody on the phone, getting questions answered, they'll be there at least to talk to you most of the time. Not to say 100% of the time.
Right, right, right.
Every insurance company.
There's going to be problems, yes.
Is issues. But again, it's what you pay for. So when you see those companies that advertise on TV, usually they want to be customer friendly. They want their customers to like them. What we're concerned about are what we call low standard, low cost, non-standard insurance companies that you've never heard of, that you will not know about unless you look for them or you get into an accident with one of their customers.
Who's got an insurance nightmare out of there? I bet there's someone listening that's dealt with this. 312-981-7200. We got some other examples as well. We'll talk about those after the news. And then I really want to break down, Neil, the idea of, okay, if you have this kind of insurance, what should you do? Or if you don't and you have one of the more recognizable names, what should you do to maybe help protect against something like this? Or what can you do to be more proactive? But before we hit the break in the news, I want you to, you know, give a shout out. How can people reach you if they need your help in any of this?
Yes. So we help people who are victims of accidents, who have problems with insurance companies, have an insurance dispute. Our telephone number is 312-600-9585, or you can find us on the internet at GainsbergLaw.com.
It's a GainsbergLaw.com. What's that number one more time? Go slowly.
312.
I can never listen that quickly. 312. I'm typing this out, okay?
600-9585.
I'm so bad at typing things out in numbers. It's 312-600-9585.
Yes, and you could call or text that number.
So I know that you do personal injury stuff. So even if you're not hurt and you're okay, but you're having a big problem with getting a claim done, you're going to be able to help them out too?
Yeah, we do property damages
okay.
for cars. We also do other types of claims for losses if somebody has an issue with a theft claim or some sort of other like fire claim. So we do a variety of insurance claims. We help consumers and victims of thefts or other types of losses against insurance companies.
Oh, my God. I bet there's someone in insurance hell right now. 312-981-7200. Let's hear your horror stories of insurance here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We'll have more with Neil Gainsburg after the break. Again, we're going to chat about what to do if you have one of these low-cost or non-standard insurance companies. And if you don't, what you need to be aware of and what situations could arise that could cause some real problems. 312-981-7200. We'll get to your calls after this break and the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kevin. Hour two of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, just moments away. What I want everybody to do is think about who your insurance provider is for car insurance. If you don't know off the top of your head, that might be problem one. Do a little digging. If you have to go look in your glove box to find out, okay, because you may not be as well covered as you think. In fact, you may be barely covered at all. And even if you have great insurance, you might be in a load of trouble because of some of the other drivers on the roadway. Neil Gainsburg is going to chat about that after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Just a little bit. I just met Gemma Allen in the green room, and she's going to be chatting about cryptocurrency and divorces and NFTs, and she's just a joy. I've only met her for about 15 seconds. Really enjoy her and looking forward to our conversation in a little bit. But I still love you, Neil Gainsburg. Come on now. We have to finish this great conversation. We're getting so many texts about what we call low-cost or non-standard insurance companies. And the reason I wanted everyone to go look and make sure they know who their insurance provider is, because some of it's automated now. It's just an automatic, you know, they take it out of your bank account now each month. That's how mine is, that we may forget who we have. And we had a lot of texts wondering, how many people use low-cost or non-standard insurance? And I know you don't have a round number or a percentage, but it's a fair amount, right?
Yes, a lot of people. There are a lot of non-standard companies. And they insure many, many people here throughout Chicago and even Illinois and Indiana and other states as well.
And there's a lot of people that maybe that's their only option, right? And they don't have as much money, they don't have as resources, that's who they're going with. But do you find that there are people that could afford one of the more name brand insurance companies that don't because they're just trying to save a few bucks, or maybe they didn't do the research?
Yes, both of those are reasons that people will choose a non-standard insurance company. Number one, you see all these commercials out there where, you know, don't pay too much for your insurance. Don't pay too much for insurance. That may work if you're never in an accident, but if you're in one accident and you don't pay for your insurance, you could be in a lot of trouble. So people should not think that insurance is something to that not to pay the bills on.
Right.
Not to pay what is necessary, not to, you know, to go cheap on it. Going cheap on insurance could really cost you in the long run. So a lot of people out there just figure, oh, it's cheap, it's insurance, it's going to be good, whatever it is. No, it's not. Not necessarily. You don't get the same insurance with every company. So you should do some research. It's very important. Whenever you buy insurance, a lot of people go through independent agents. A lot of people get stuff online. Just do some basic research. Google the name of the insurance company. Go to the Better Business Bureau. See if there's been complaints. A lot of these non-standard companies have a lot of complaints. Look at the ratings. Look at the reviews. We have this internet now where you can see reviews, how other people have dealt with these businesses. Every business is pretty much reviewed. Look at the reviews of any companies. Do some basic research like you would with any other product. Like if you were buying a car, like if you were buying some sort of name brand product, mm-hmm. you'd always do some sort of research. Or if you're going to go on a vacation, you want to look at see at the hotel you're staying at. You look, see what the reviews of the hotel. Same thing for insurance. Yeah. Make sure you do that basic stuff to see if this insurance company, if you're using an agent, see if this agent places you with decent insurance companies. And one thing to always, if you see it on TV, it's probably okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say all the companies that advertise on TV will give you the best service, but if they're on TV and people know about it, they have a national brand name because they're doing their job, they're being customer friendly, they'll provide customer service, at least something that's non-standard companies tend to lack.
I mean, it's not a bad idea to call the company and see what sort of service you get on the phone line, right? To inquire about anything.
Exactly. But again, a lot of people going non-standard, they don't direct solicit. So what they do is they go through agents. So somebody go through an agent, an insurance agent, and then the insurance agent places you with the non-standard company. So you can call your insurance agent and you might get through and stuff like that. But if you're in an accident or a claim, you're not dealing with your agent. You're dealing with the company. So it's a lot harder. The easier thing is just to go online, go on your phone, and just do some basic research about claims with this company. Just do claims and put the company's name in, and you'll get the reviews. You'll see the experiences of other people who have claims with those companies.
All right, that's the first person advice, right? You individually out there listening, know who your insurance company is, etc. What do the rest of us need to know about the situations? Like, I got to give credit to ABC7, their investigative wing. They've done some interesting reports about these low-cost insurance companies. One woman, a car crashed through her fence. The fence was left torn apart, and her insurance company could not figure, or they could not get the other insurance company, the insurance company of the driver, to pay for the fence. And eventually, they had to rebuild the fence. They had a dog, and then they're going to have to go through all those claims in the back end. Are there things that the rest of us can be doing to not worry as much about these other insurance companies?
That situation was a unique situation. But what we can do is make sure you have good insurance. Make mm-hmm. sure you have good coverages. Make sure you have good insurance so that you know if something happens, you get hit by somebody who has a low-cost insurance or doesn't have insurance, because there are people driving around who don't have insurance.
Right.
And that's one of the things these low-cost companies do. They do at least provide some basic insurance for people who may not have it. But if you get hit by somebody who does have a low-cost carrier, that you have sufficient coverage that you can go through your company to get your car fixed, to get your property fixed right away, and then your company can then go after the low-cost insurance company.
So don't do it yourself.
Yeah, don't do it yourself. Rely on your insurance company so that they can do what you need to do to make sure that you're back and running again very quickly after an accident or other casualty.
How do you do that? Is it just a matter of calling your insurance agent and saying, I'm washing my hands of this, figure this out on your own, and you have to be direct and tell them? Because maybe your insurance company's dragging their feet a little bit.
Well, if you have a decent insurance company, they have a good claims office, so you can get hold of somebody quickly in the claims, and they could set you up with a repair shop or something like that, or tell you where to go, or get somebody out there. Or give you guidance of if your house is damaged, like the woman had her fence damaged, and mm-hmm. what to do. The problem with the woman with the fence is that her fence was only like $500 damage.
Right.
And her deductible, like most people with homeowners and policies, have high $2,000, $3,000 deductibles. So her insurance company wasn't going to cover it. So she had no choice for that little $500 to go through the liability carrier of the wrongful driver that hit her house.
I see.
And all she can do is wait for them to act, and they don't act quickly, as that article points out. She had to make many, many calls, send many, many estimates in, wait, and until she got the news involved or the media involved, the insurance company really wasn't doing much.
Can you be the muscle for people then? Is that what you
do? Yes, we do that. We do handle claims against insurance company if somebody has a loss and they don't have their own insurance company or some other way to get compensated. We step in there, and we're lawyers. We try to make sure that these companies have to pay when they have to pay. We fight for the person who's been injured, for who has property damage, but mainly injuries, because that's more of a what we focus on. Mm-hmm. That's more of our cup of tea. But right. we do help people, even with property damage claims, go after insurance companies and get that insurance company to make sure they're following the law, the insurance regulations of the state, and get our customers, our clients compensated for their damages.
Does this stuff change all the time? Do we see new companies popping up all the time that offer this? Or do you kind of know who the regular players are for these low-cost or non-standard insurance companies?
Many low-cost companies have been in business for many years. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of typical, traditional, non-standard companies that you recognize by their names. But there are often other companies that come into existence. I mean, I haven't recognized any really new ones mm-hmm. recently. But there's the same players, the same people, same companies doing okay. their low-cost business model.
Is there any push in Springfield to change some of the regulations? What do insurance regulatory agencies say about these companies?
Well, I mean, if you have an issue with a low-cost insurance company and you have no other recourse, you can't find somebody to help you, you don't have a lawyer that you could hire, or for whatever reason, you could always file a complaint with the Illinois Department of Insurance that regulates every insurance company here that practices or does business in the state. And that is one means, but there's so many complaints filed, and the limited resources of the government, they can only do so much. They just want to make sure that the insurance company is following the insurance regulations. And as I said earlier, the insurance regulations are very broad. They're not specific when it comes to claims. There's not really that much time frames. So what these insurance, when these complaints come through, unless they find a specific violation, they tell the person that there's not much we can do, or you need to get your own lawyer if there's been an actual, you know, factual issue that has to be litigated as to what happened. But if you do have an issue with an insurance company, you can do this free of charge. Go to the Illinois Department of Insurance website, file a complaint, and they will open an investigation
okay.
and try to give you some assistance. But, you know, there's so much going on
yeah.
in politics, in life, and what politicians yeah. can do. This is not a priority.
Yeah,
people get into accidents. Victims of accidents are not a priority of politicians. You know, whatever it is, this is not a number one issue in Springfield or in any other courthouse yeah. in this or any other legislator or municipal legislator or anything else like that in any city, county, or state level here in Illinois. It's
Man,
just not an issue.
You find this stuff interesting, don't you?
Yeah, it is interesting because I deal with it all the time. Yeah. So I have to find it interesting because every day I get calls every day from people who have issues with low-cost insurance companies. And a lot of times I can't help them because, you know, if it's a $400 or $500 claim,
right.
they can't afford an attorney. No attorney is going to get involved and sue over $400 or $500.
Right.
I can tell them to go to small claims court. If your dispute is less than $10,000 here in most courthouses here in Illinois, you can go to small claims court. But, you know, the insurance companies, they will get their own lawyers and they'll make it difficult for you
yeah.
to go through court. So the problem is people have small claims that it doesn't fit in their deductible, so they can't use the resources of their own insurance company, and they usually can't find a lawyer because it's a small claims case, so it doesn't make a business model sense for a lawyer to get involved.
Yeah. But who can you help out? Who do you want calling you right now? Who's out there listening, needs your help?
Anybody who has a problem with insurance company, we will at least evaluate the case mm-hmm. and see if we could help them. So if you have an issue where you've been injured or your car has been damaged or you've had a theft issue and you can't get anywhere with your insurance company, you're hitting a stone wall with your insurance company, feel free to give us a call. We will look into that issue and see if there's some way we could help you and work
at least
with
point
you
in the right direction.
Exactly. Or provide enough guidance. If we can't do it, perhaps provide some guidance so that you could try doing it on your own, or if there's some other resources out there that could help you that we can point to. There are consumer agencies out there
mm-hmm.
that help people who have problems with, you know, many companies, including insurance companies.
312-600-9585. 312-600-9585. GainsbergLaw.com. GainsbergLaw.com. Neil, I have to admit, and I think this is for a lot of people, I had a blind spot to this. I didn't know that this was really a huge issue, but it certainly is. I'm glad you brought this to our attention, Neil.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. 312-600-9585 to talk to the folks at Gainsburg Law and attorney Neil Gainsburg. Have a good one, okay, Neil?
Thank you. Take care.
All right, we're going to talk cryptocurrency divorces and really money and divorces. It's a real sticky subject, but we're going to dive into it next here on WGN. 720 WGN, John Hansen here, host of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. It's 4:23 near sunset time here on this Saturday afternoon. Hope you're having a great day. I'm so excited to talk to family law attorney Gemma Allen from Allen and Glassman. How are you doing, Gemma?
I'm doing really well.
I love that name, Gemma.
Thank you. It's Italian.
Yeah, you were telling me, though, it's popular in England these days,
well,
though.
Well, it's very popular in England, and there's a gorgeous Asian actress named Gemma, and there's also a lot of people in Norway named Gemma.
Okay.
So go figure.
Go I'm a little Italian, a little Norwegian. So there we go.
Well, maybe we'll have a child named Gemma.
There you go. Let's talk a little bit just basically about divorces in terms of money, any financial situation. I know we've heard that a lot, that money causes so many issues in relationships. Is that still the case? Is that the number one thing?
100% still true. It causes more problems than sex, and that's hard to believe. And we talk more freely about sex than we talk about money.
You're right. I think that we've opened up about sex, and we can have conversations about what's going on in relationships. Why can't we do that with money?
You know what? I've decided it's because it's so loaded. It's a loaded topic. It comes from your childhood. Does money mean power to you, control, freedom, fear? What does it mean? And so it's such a loaded topic. And then there's a lot of shame involved.
Mm-hmm.
Do I make enough? Do I make too much? Am I too showy? Do I not have the latest status symbols? And then in a marriage, there's so much about what's the role of each party. And now that you have two-party earners,
mm-hmm.
so mostly everybody's working in
right.
a wonderful world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have two-party earners, who should be doing what? Who should be supplying what? How do we handle it? What if there's unequal earnings? And the not discussing it is what leads to resentment and, night terrors about money for the person who doesn't understand it. And a lot of divorce. Sometimes when people come into our office, John, you won't believe it. You have to fill out a financial affidavit. Sometimes that's the first time, and I'm talking about even the breadwinner, that they have ever been that analytical about their income, their outflow, and their assets.
Meaning they haven't ever made a budget.
Never.
They never really analyze what's coming in.
Never.
And they're the ones that are maybe making the money, too.
Exactly. And they're the ones saying you're spending too much or you're spending too little, but no one's ever really been analytical about it.
Do you find that often partners and spouses have no idea maybe how much the other person makes, how much they really spend?
I know you won't believe it, but it's true. People don't. How can you live with somebody and not know what they're earning when you have to keep the whole ship afloat, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is such a loaded topic. And the other thing is it's even more loaded among women. So I say that when guys are in locker rooms talking about, interest rates and investments and lending each other money, which
mm-hmm.
guys do,
yep.
women are in locker rooms talking about feelings and emotions because that's what we do.
Generally speaking.
Generally. No, and I'm a woman. Believe me, I'm
right.
the last one to ever knock the,
no.
the wonderful sex.
Right.
But what I'm guilting myself, too.
Yeah.
I'm actually saying me, too, because I don't talk about it with my girlfriends. We don't lend each other money. I don't know what my friends make. They don't know what I make. It's a very interesting sort of social wall.
Yeah.
We don't cross it.
I don't get it. But again, I've only been married for a few years, so I'm sure there's some other people that have been married a lot longer who say, no, this happens. Is it something that happens over time where maybe they were open with each other at the beginning, but as dynamics change, it changes? Or do you normally find that couples that never started talking about money never start talking about money?
I think you're right on the latter. If you never start, it's harder to open that dialogue. I think there are ways to do it, and there are lots of, I see that you're going to have a new program talking about that issue.
Yeah.
I think there are ways to open the dialogue, but people have to make that commitment. We're going to do it. It's going to be hard. It's kind of like, getting naked, but you're getting naked financially.
Right.
It's financial intimacy, and I swear it matters as much as any other form.
When it comes to the unfortunate reality, and I say unfortunate, even though nowadays, of course, for many people, divorce is freedom, right? It's an opportunity for a new start, and that's great for them. Okay, so when it comes to that moment, do you find that there are couples that don't even know what accounts there are?
Absolutely.
My husband had an E-Trade account with $400,000 and I've never heard of.
I've had people shocked to find out what they did have and shocked to find out what they did not have, because so many people live so far above their means that the one who's not in charge of the budget is under a lot of illusions about how wonderful it must be. Then I've had other people shocked to find out they were living so small
mm-hmm.
and they actually had a lot of money. Now, that's not necessarily bad news in a divorce.
Right.
Because at least you get to divide more money.
Right.
But it shouldn't be that way. Someone shouldn't have been living so hand to mouth,
mm-hmm.
you know, when in fact there was a lot of money being assembled somewhere and they didn't know about it.
That's the revenue side. Secret credit cards, too, stuff like that.
Well, and cryptocurrency. I mean, that's our new thing. But the truth is, secret credit cards outflow discretionary spending. Every one of us has a secret discretionary spending that we don't want anyone else to know about.
And that may not be the worst thing. A little bit, right?
A little bit.
Everyone should have control a little bit of their own stuff.
I agree.
We have separate checking, joint savings. I think that's my own talk. That's how we do it. But other people can do it their own way.
There's one other thought on that.
No?
Separate checking, but one joint housekeeping account.
Yes. So for the general things around
yes.
the house. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
I
helps.
Think that's kind of how we do that. Or,
yeah,
hey, I'm going to get this.
Puts in a certain amount. And you look at it on a month-to-month basis and say, oh, property tax, you know, so we're going to be a bigger contributor this month. But, yes, separate savings. And, yes, I think we all need a little privacy. And you don't want to admit, you know, that package from wherever,
mm-hmm.
whether it's tech or cosmetics or clothes. We all have it, and we deserve it.
Right.
So
we're going to take a break for the news. You teased up cryptocurrency. That's what we're going to spend the bulk of our time talking about, because it is really fascinating. First of all, you explain cryptocurrency better than anyone else I've ever had on the show talk about it, but also how we go from there and how that gets allocated and all that sort of stuff. If someone is running out of the car and they're just like, I love Gemma, I need to talk to her about my situations, how can people reach you?
The firm name is Allen & Glassman Chartered. Our number is 312-853-3000. And I thank you for that.
312-853-3000.
Correct. And we have a website, Allen & Glassman Chartered. And it's my name, Gemma Allen, at allenandglassmanchartered.com for the email. So
all right.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to keep on talking after the news here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association at 438. Continuing our conversation with the wonderful Gemma Allen from Allen & Glassman Chartered, 312-853-3000. Gemma, let's talk cryptocurrency and its role in divorces. And I think that this was probably, I guess, expected, right? As cryptocurrency grew in popularity. Is it the secret nature of it? Or I guess maybe secret's not the right word. Maybe it is. The idea that it's anonymous, so that's a little bit more secure, has led to people stashing it away, hiding it from their spouses. And then that's going to come up in divorces.
Well, we hope it comes up in divorces, but the private anonymous notion of it means that sometimes that's a chase that we have to do as lawyers.
Okay.
Because the whole notion is that it's private.
Right.
And I always say, if you're lucky enough that your spouse is talking about cryptocurrency and maybe even involving you in the decisions, at least if the marriage goes astray, you have that information.
Right.
But for many people who have been involved in divorce planning, they may not have ever mentioned the cryptocurrency. So we are very much challenged as attorneys in those cases, because hidden assets in the first place
are tough already.
Oh my gosh, they're already our nemesis.
Right.
And so then you talk about the most hidden of the hidden assets, unhideable, designed to be private and anonymous, and we are legally challenged, but we're rising to it.
Is it because there's no paper trail, or it's easy to kind of, funnel the money in a different way that's not trackable? Is that what makes it difficult to find?
I think it's difficult to find. What you do find is there's a paper trail for everything, sort of. So one of the things we do, first of all, is now in all cases, ask the question.
Yeah.
And at least if someone has an answer truthfully, you've got a fraud basis later on.
Oh, so you ask them under, like, in a deposition.
Ask them at a deposition.
Okay.
Ask them in a written plea, in an interrogatory where they have to answer under oath.
Hopefully that scares them enough to answer truthfully.
Well, maybe.
Maybe.
But guess what? The IRS now is asking. So since 2019, on your 1040, just below where you identify yourself, is actually a demand for the answer to the question about, have you traded and acquired, et cetera, cryptocurrency. And so there is an opening there for a lawyer who's looking for cryptocurrency. Also, however, none of us are naive enough to believe that everyone's answering that question truthfully.
People lie to the IRS, Gemma. Oh, my
gosh, I know. Well, you know what the IRS did was they sent out 10,000 subpoenas to the most famous of the crypto exchanges, John Doe subpoenas. And when they got the answers, because if you're talking about an exchange in cryptocurrency, they're sort of like a Schwab. They are somewhat responsive and often very responsive to subpoenas.
Mm-hmm.
And so they answered, of course, to the IRS, because they will answer the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the IRS sent out a lot of letters to people saying, you might want to rethink your last year's tax return, because we have information that you may have. And I think they gave people the opportunity to amend.
Right.
That won't go on forever, though.
I was going to say, they're not going to give that many freebies.
No.
They don't do that for many other things, do they?
No.
Like, hey, you might have missed a zero right over here. Oh, there you go.
Right. There's not a lot of that softness mm-hmm. in the IRS. But you know what? It's complicated for the IRS, too.
100%.
So.
And we couldn't even pass a bill giving them more authority or more money to be able to dive into these sorts of things deeper. So do people need to make sure to hire you or someone from your firm or someone that knows this stuff, because the wrong lawyer that you're having, let alone doing it on your own, they may not know where to look.
Well, of course, I'd like to say yes, and my partner wants me to say yes. But the
I'll say yes for you,
thank
Gemma.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Uh-huh. The other truth, though, is that if someone is really good at what they're doing, and there are other good attorneys, although I'd like to say we're the best, mm-hmm. and we're actually really more involved in this than a lot of firms.
Right.
There had to be an infusion of capital somewhere to buy the first cryptocurrency.
Okay.
And so when you're doing some forensic work, you may find an ATM transfer or a bank transfer out,
right,
where you can't find where it went to.
Right, they didn't find it under the mattress, in theory. And if they did, the wife may know that she's sleeping on top of it. There had to be, at some point, money going out to get this.
And there had to be money in, and generally speaking, the exchanges particularly won't allow you to send cash mm-hmm. in.
Right.
So you're going to have to be doing a financial transaction of some kind. The point, though, is interesting. You could have been dealing in crypto a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, in divorce, we only look back maybe 3 years, maybe five if the case warrants it. But there's a cost-benefit analysis you have to do in your own head about what am I going to find versus what is the looking going to cost the client.
Interesting.
So it's an interesting question. But, generally, you can find that on-ramp, and that's something. The IRS is helping us, and starting in 2023, there are going to be even more severe and more reporting requirements by corporations and by the exchanges. So I think that you're going to see something that is maybe a little bit more helpful.
Okay.
And it might start even earlier than 2023.
Okay.
So
I'm pretty naive to divorce, which I guess is a good thing, right? And I
yes.
hope to be naive forever. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
And I wish that for you.
Yeah, thank you. How much power, I mean, as an attorney representing one party, how much power do you have to go after financial records? Do you have pretty much carte blanche, the authority of the judicial system to dive into anything, whether it's working with the IRS, working with financial bank institutions? Do they have to report everything to you if you go and seek it out?
Well, the answer is we have broad powers,
okay.
number one. But I would say, for very pragmatic reasons, we rarely would go to the IRS.
Okay.
We can go to returns, and we can go to the corporate returns, personal returns, do some forensic
get
work.
Some documentation.
Correct. But often, the IRS is a threat sometimes one spouse will use against the other, but that's not smart.
Right.
Because, in fact, if the marriage has a problem
mm-hmm.
with the IRS, you both suffer because it's a marital debt if you filed a joint return. So we don't really recommend any kind of leverage or threatening or use of the IRS,
mm-hmm.
but the clues can come from the returns.
Right.
And we have the ability to get the returns. We have the ability to get bank records, credit card statements. If there was a business, the corporate perks and benefits, because people have very complicated compensation.
100%.
And now that will be another complication with cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Because some people are starting to take their income in cryptocurrency or portions thereof, especially younger guys like you.
Oh, I'm not in that world. Don't worry. I think they're younger than me, Gemma.
Well,
but I see what you're saying, right? That's
yes.
that's the flashy thing. We hear of sports stars trying to take money in cryptocurrency now. Yeah.
Well, there are many, and there are many of the teams that are now offering it. I think Mark Cuban, for one.
Yeah.
I think the
it's
Sacramento
the hip
Kings.
New thing.
Yeah, and they say, hey, you can, I don't care if you're management, athlete, coach, you can take your income in that. And I saw that one of the leading firms in the city on employment compensation has also talked about now they're having to do a division on cryptocurrency pay, mm-hmm. because income is taxed on cryptocurrency at the value it came in your door.
But
guess what? I mean, just look at Friday.
Yeah. The value crashes.
Dropped and is seemingly crashing.
But you're taxed. Oh, I see. So the moment in which you get that value,
that's
what you're taxed at.
Correct.
And so if you lose 25% in a Bitcoin over a month, which is not all that unheard of, you are still paying tax on the higher amount.
Exactly. And you don't have money to pay their taxes.
You're breaking my brain, Jenna. Gemma, this is great. The one question I wanted to ask, and then we'll take a break. And then if you don't mind sticking around a little longer.
Okay.
That's
fun.
As we've been talking about cryptocurrency and divorce, I've kind of pictured, a husband or a wife. They have cryptocurrency. They've been investing in it. Maybe they kept it secret from their husband or wife, not for nefarious purposes, but hey, they're into it. Maybe the other person isn't. But I guess, and I wonder if you've seen this, since it is a little bit more secretive, have you noticed that as people ramp up knowing a divorce might be coming, purposely putting that money there as a nefarious, hopefully to dodge it in the future?
I have absolutely seen that. And I've seen it. It's very tempting, Sin is seductive, right? And so it's very tempting to say, hey, I really worked hard. I was the bigger breadwinner, or I was the homemaker and, I never had the life I wanted. So I'm not going to be sexist here. I think everyone's tempted to think about maybe ways to hide something. We have an expression that everybody in a case has a little. We call it pushki, which is the Jewish word for a little bit of money under the rug. But we generally feel in most cases, if it's $10,000 or $15,000, so be it.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about cryptocurrency, it might have been $10,000 to start, and it might be $1 million now.
Right.
Depending on what they did.
What they did, right.
So,
and which coin they bought and
exactly,
when they bought it.
And how lucky or smart or whatever combination that is.
What a crazy world.
It is.
We got to take a quick commercial break. More with Gemma Allen from Allen & Glassman Chartered, allenglassman.com, or 312-853-3000 is the phone number, right?
Thank you.
Quick break, and we'll be back with more on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Just a few minutes left here on Let's Get Legal. And Gemma, I know we've only known each other here for about 45 minutes or so, but I can never imagine a single carpet of yours ever not being perfectly clean. You just strike
so me.
Kind. You probably have this gorgeous, clean place that when you walk in every day.
Well,
you just
I'm
have that style to you.
And I'm not there a lot, so it's easy to keep it clean.
Yeah, there
I'm
we go.
Working.
We only have a few minutes left. So we've been talking broadly about divorce and money and that whole world, and then we've entered this cryptocurrency world too. Who should be reaching out to you? Our listeners come from all sorts of different backgrounds, and many of them are unfortunately going through a divorce right now, or maybe fortunately, depending on how you look at it. Who should be reaching out to you?
So I think anyone that wants to get a sense of what divorce is really like. We always talk to people who call us on a consultant basis, and we do a first consultation at no charge because, as you may be able to tell, I and my partner are passionate about the topic.
I was gonna, you know it in and out.
And I do know it in and out, and I also emotionally know it in and out as well because I actually at some point was divorced. So I bring a lot of wisdom, whether I wanted it or not, to the topic. And when you have been there and when you've seen so many cases, I think people need to be able to call someone that they know will talk to them as if they were on the other end of the phone. I talk to people the way I'd want to hear. What are the basics? What can I expect? How much is it going to cost? Although that's a very hard question to
yeah,
answer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very difficult. But I think you need to call somebody and talk to someone. You're going to have a short, intense relationship with your divorce lawyer, but intense. So you better like them, get along with them, trust them with to always be strategizing in your best interests. And trust them when they tell you, listen, we've looked under every rock. This is how much money there is. Now let's start to divide it. And that's a trust, too, because we'd all like to think there's more money somewhere. We all hope there's more money somewhere. But sometimes when the work has been done, now what's the best strategy and what's the best division of those assets? And by the way, what about my children? And we care so much about the children of divorce. That's a really whole other topic, but more important in many, many ways.
Yeah, for sure. It is more important than the money. At the end of the day, we want our kids to be safe, happy, healthy, and move on. And divorces during the world of COVID-19. COVID-19 have upended a lot of that situations too. So it's complicated.
It is.
This is a really weird question to ask you. I know a lot of people have been trying to go through mediation. Maybe they're in good shape. They're friends, right? They're not trying to wrong the other one. Or maybe it's the exact opposite. Maybe it's really nasty. Either person can call you, right? Either situation.
Oh, we do. We actually go from the most complex to the most average.
Okay.
And we run from the most amicable to the war of the world.
Right.
We do. We really run the gamut. We like them all for different reasons.
Yeah.
And there's a function of lawyer-assisted mediation where people can stay friends, but they actually need legal advice, because the problem with just going to a mediator by yourself is you don't even know terrain is.
Right.
So we are big advocates of lawyer-assisted mediation and do that. We believe in doing each case as the battlefield seems to be presenting itself,
mm-hmm.
or the peace table.
So whether it's roses or mud. You're
We're
fine.
There.
Yeah.
We're there. And we like them for different reasons. I mean, they present different challenges.
Yeah.
But we get a lot of nice notes a year later from people.
Good.
And pictures of the cards showing their new life.
Yeah.
And that is really, that's what keeps us in this business.
I was going to say, and that's the thing. That's probably what drives you. You're creating a new opportunity for someone. Maybe hard, maybe difficult, probably is. But there they had a new opportunity. The reason I asked that question is because you're obviously so knowledgeable about this stuff that it almost, I wondered if a listener thought, well, you know, I don't need, we're okay. We're in better situation than that. I don't need Gemma. No, everyone needs a Gemma. Everyone needs a lawyer to be looking at that stuff, whether it's amicable or not. We're out of time today. Gemma, I hope you come back again. This
Thank
has been
you.
Fascinating. And you're great friends with Terry Savage, too, who I love and adore.
She actually sent a shout out when she heard this. She sent me a sort of a little clip about a joke about women divorce lawyers. And then I said, it's funny you'd send it because I'm just going to see Gemma Hansen.
Girl, she's so great. Gemma, thank you so much. And remind people again where they can reach you at.
So our offices are at 150 North Michigan. The phone is 312-853-3000. The website is www.allenglassman.com. And my phone again, 312-853-3000.
That's what you do in radio. You read it twice. Nice job there, Jim. Great to chat with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll wrap things up after this here on 720. And you can visit Neil Gainsberg at gainsberglaw.com, GAINSBERGlaw.com, 312-600-9585. And again, we just chatted with the wonderful Gemma Allen from Allen and Glassman Chartered, 312-853-3000. Fascinating stuff here today. Really cool discussing the world of insurance that I had no idea about, and cryptocurrency, which I am equally as dumb on. Let's Get Legal next week. We'll be at a different time. We're going to be at 1 o'clock next Saturday. So tune in for that. We got a lot of great stuff for you to break down.